I'm wearing PAP projects right now, Scott.
I am too.
And others could as well.
I ran this morning for 3 hours, and not once did my shorts climb on me.
You know, I like to climb.
I did my own climbing.
Very good. You climbed hills instead of your shorts climbing you.
Hey, we're finishing up our fifth week now with the PATH Projects giveaway. And I want to announce that Matt Mossman from South Dakota and Ed Liu from San Francisco are
our
final winners. And they received a PATH Projects kit of stuff. The shorts, the undergarment, the shirt, the hat.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. But no, it's not too late for you to be a winner, Don.
How's that?
If you follow the link on Trail Runner Nation's podcast, the website, the partners page,
right,
what I'm trying to get
at. Yeah, partners page. We only say that every podcast, Scott.
Click on the PATH Projects banner, and that will take you over, and you can purchase some for yourself. The stuff is amazing. It's comfortable. You can read all about the technology. I started reading about the technology. I thought I was going to enlighten you on this little ad about
right.
their technology.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. All I know is it works great, and it feels even better.
Perfect.
Go to our partners page, link over to pathprojects.co.
Aftershocks. What does that mean, Scott?
It means you can listen to your music and the environment. I was just looking at a post that was on Trail Running on Facebook, and somebody said, hey, what are the best Bluetooth headphones? And I was surprised how many people mentioned Aftershocks.
Really?
Number one was people that said, don't wear any headphones. You should be listening to the environment. You need to be safe. Don't wear any. And the second one was wear Aftershocks because you can do that and you can listen to your music or your podcast.
You can hear the mountain biker's bell ringing. You can hear the cougar perhaps clawing at you.
I wear them.
Scott, I was referencing things of danger, not your wife.
Well, you got to watch out. You got to be aware of all your surroundings.
That is the theme.
You can get a deal if you go to our partners page and click on the Aftershocks link. You can get a free pair of Trail Runner Nation all-weather sleeves if you buy a pair of Aftershocks.
You know, they're not only for the trail, Scott. Just a real quick one. I've put them on in a quiet room and just enjoy the rich sounds. It has great sound quality.
It does. Get yourself a pair. You won't regret it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will, the group of the nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War, and today we're going to learn how to run effortless with no injury.
Well, that's perfect. Sign me up.
Is that a good title for a podcast?
Perfect.
We have the co-founder and owner of Chi Running, Danny Dreyer, on with us. And if you've been around the internet or been running for very long, you've at some point heard of Chi Running. And we're glad that we have Danny. Thanks, Danny, for joining us.
Nice to be here, Scott and Don.
You know, we connected. We've wanted Danny on for many years now, and we finally got connected with him, and we came across because of Danny a quote from our good friend Dr. Mark Cucuzella, who we've had on many times, and he says this about Chi Running. He said, "This method has given me running longevity, made it easier and painless, and has given me confidence I can run forever into the retirement home. The Chi Running methods are applied physics and biomechanics that any runner can apply to their benefit. No pain, no gain is a thing of the past. No pain, thank you. The Chi Running way." That's from Mark Cucuzella. So that's quite an endorsement.
Absolutely. And if it comes from Dr. Cucuzella. We're
all
advocates.
Ears.
All ears.
So, Danny, tell us about how you got started with this whole chi running thing.
Yeah. Well, I started off as an ultra runner, and this was back in 1991. I think I ran my first ultra, and that was back. I was 45. And so I didn't start off with 5Ks or 10Ks. I was one of those weirdos that just dove right into my first race was a 50 miler. But I trained for it for 3.5 years. So I really wanted to do one, but I knew it was going to take quite a bit of, build myself up to it. And so, you know, at age 45, I don't know if it was a midlife crisis or what, but I said, you know, what distance would I be competitive at, you know? So I looked at all the record books and I said, well, I can do an 8-minute mile. What distance am I competitive at? And so I kept, the only way I could be competitive was go up to the 50 mile range. And then, yeah, all the national records are right about an 8-minute mile. So I said, well, if I could do 10 of them right now, if I could string out 50 of them, then I could be a contender. Yeah. And so I did that, and I ended up having a very successful ultra running career doing that. And then how I got started into chi running was that.
Hold on 1 second, Danny. I've got a question for you. So you can do 10 miles at an 8-minute pace. What happens when you do the next set of 10 and the next set of 10? Were you pleasantly surprised, or were you shocked?
Oh, yeah. No, I was. What I did was I just added 1 8-minute mile at a time. Slowly worked my way up. That's really gradual progress. So I wasn't like going crazy and trying to push myself to accomplish this monster thing. I just set myself a goal of, you know, when I get up to where I think I can do 50 at a reasonable pace, then I'll know I'm ready. Yeah.
Did you think back then in retrospect that you had good form and good gait back then?
No, I'm not a talented runner. I'm one of those guys that I'm the only thing I'm talented at is sensing my body. So okay. I could tell when I was hurting, what was going on. And sometimes I'd be able to figure it out. But I spent a lot of time watching other people pass me. and I have good ability to pick out what's going on in other people's running form. So whenever somebody passed me, I knew that they were doing something I wasn't. So I was always watching my competitors, and that really helped me a lot. And, you know, then at some point in my ultra career, I was a friend of mine. I grew up in Boulder, so I was really used to running tons of trails there. And a friend of mine turned me on to a local Tai Chi teacher. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, I have a Chinese background, you know, I could, that'd be kind of fun to learn. And from day one, the guy was talking about aligning your posture, moving from your center, relaxing your arms and legs. And I thought, whoa, well, let me see if I can apply some of this to my running. Next day I went out and my roof was blown off. It was so much easier to run when I applied some of these principles to Tai Chi. From Tai Chi to my running, and because I'd been running for 25 years already. And to have that big of a difference overnight in my running really rocked my boat. So I said, there's something to this, and that's what I've been studying is that link ever since.
You know, I've got to say that's amazing that you're able to think about running form before you really knew about it. You knew it was important. How I learned about running form was I was being cued in by like Mark Cucuzella, and then unfortunately I took a stroll through memory lane on some pictures, and I saw myself over striding, heel striking, just doing everything that leaning forward too much, just things you shouldn't do, and I did it oblivious. I didn't even know people were passing me. I just thought they were faster, not I had poor form.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and it's so funny that how easy it is to fix some of this stuff so that nobody really has to be damaged by their poor form or be necessarily slowed down too much by their poor form. And, you know, it's just changing your form.
So when you started applying some of these techniques from Tai Chi, did you find that you started going faster? What were the results of doing this?
Well, the first result I found was that there was a lot less effort put into my running. So I would finish my runs and I wouldn't be tired. That was the the biggest aha that hit me right then, right off the bat, was that, wow, my legs aren't tired. And then I did it day after day after day. And pretty soon I realized, after a while, I didn't need any recovery time. That's how effective it was. And so then I go, whoa, because I was training for ultras then. So I would do lots of long runs, and it would take me a day or two to recover from my really long runs. And this way I could go back out the next day and jump right back into my training. There was no lag time. And I thought, wow, this is pretty fun, you know? And so first of all, it was the lack of recovery time. Secondly, it was faster, because I remember that first week I ran a 5K, one of my training loops in my neighborhood. And I'd run this thing a million times. I knew exactly what the time was it's going to take me to run it and everything else. And this one day I went and ran it, and I came back like 5 minutes early. And
wow.
I did not feel anything going on that I pushed the pace or anything like that. So then that's when it really convinced me that that means that I'm doing speed and I don't know that I'm doing speed. How cool is that? You know, if I could define this and sell it and teach people this, that would be really good. And that's what I've been doing since. You know, it's so effective that you can run faster without all of that extra muscle training, which a lot of competitive runners do.
Yeah, and maybe a misnomer. When I think chi running, somehow I think slow and easy, but not the case. I'm just throwing that out there. You know, I
totally hear it.
Yeah. So tell me about speed, and I'm interested in that. I don't have to be slower to run efficiently or with chi.
You know, it's interesting because people have that misconception about Tai Chi, in that it's this really slow kind of martial art dance form kind of thing. But Tai Chi is also the mother of all martial arts. That means that if you only did it at that speed, you ended up getting nailed by every one of your competitors, you know? And so but the idea is to learn it really slowly so that you feel that balance in your body. You feel yourself being able to relax at certain times and align yourself and everything else. Then you gradually work at speeding it up, speeding it up, speeding it up, so you can bring that level of integrity from your body and relaxation and good breathing into your speed, then speed becomes easy.
Before we get too much into part of that form, can you share with us the story about how you and Dr. Cucuzzella met and some of the influences that he found with you?
Well, I met Mark in 2006. I was teaching a workshop in Washington, D.C., and he came to the workshop because he just lives in Virginia, and he had heard about it, and he came to find out. And he came to the workshop because he was having a lot of trouble with his metatarsal heads, because he'd been a fast runner and a track runner and everything his whole life. And he was looking at the possibility of having to have foot surgery. He was thinking of taking off from running. It was just too painful. And so after that workshop, he realized from the difference in technique between what I teach people and what he had been doing was so vast that he was completely overusing all of those small muscles and bones in his lower legs, which most runners do. They over-rely on those. And he realized that that's not what it took to run fast. And now all of a sudden, a huge light bulb went off in his head when he realized that instead of towing off and pushing yourself with your legs, the best method really of running forward is to just let your body fall forward, and then you just pick up your legs to keep up with your fall. That's a way different usage of your muscles, because then you're not using your legs for propulsion any longer. You're using them to only for stability during your support stance. Your propulsion comes from the fact that you are leading with your upper body.
So can you, this is of course an audio podcast, and so we can't give you any visuals, but, and we do, there are a lot of really good videos that we'll link to the podcast notes on this, but can you give us in kind of a nutshell, what are some of the key components of chi running?
Sure.
And so we can visualize, a lot of our listeners listen to these while they're running, so maybe they can try these out today
in real time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the main components of chi running and good efficient running is to have really good posture while you're running. because that's your support stance. Every time you come down on your foot, you want to have your entire body supported really well by your structure, not by your muscles. So the worse your posture is, the more your muscles have to work, the tighter you get everything else. So you really want to support your body weight with your bones. Okay, so that's alignment. And to get that, really, I just tell people lift through the crown of your head, you know? Just lift really tall, just there. You just did it. See, just, you know, see how that, and notice when you do that, how it changes how well you can breathe, mm-hmm. how it changes your cognitive abilities from your brain, how you can actually feel less pressure on the seat of your chair. And if you're running, it's less pressure on your feet. So that's, posture is a key. And then,
So can I pause on posture? Does that mean your ear should be over your shoulder over yep. Your hip over your knee, and then your knee over your ankle? Is that the erect posture?
Pull the knee out. Everything else is good.
Okay.
Because your knee's bent, so you know your knee will be somewhere different every second.
You haven't
know?
Seen how slow I run, Danny.
Yes. So yeah, it's shoulders, hips, and ankles, and your ears are in there as well. Yeah, and then excuse me, I caught that flu last week, so I'm getting rid of the last parts of it. So then the next part is really where your propulsion comes from, and that is, you know, really allowing your body to fall forward so that your entire body is actually most of the time ahead of your feet. So, you know, where most running injuries come from is when people reach with their legs. It's called overstriding, right? And most people think to run down the road, you have to reach with your legs. You have to reach forward and you paw back. Well, that's one of the coaching techniques for track runners, people who are sprinters, of like really reaching with your legs. You watch Usain Bolt, you know, the guy's totally reaching out front with his feet. As soon as he touches down, though, he's pawing back. But that's a sprinter. That's not somebody who's going to be doing 10K, half marathon. Do you run that way during a marathon? They're going to carry you away in a body bag.
But his foot still comes down right underneath his body weight, his body
exactly.
mass, right?
Exactly. So by the time his foot hits the ground, it's already heading in the same direction as the road. Mm. Where people run into problems is when they swing their leg forward into an oncoming road. All right, that doubles, triples, magnifies the impact many, many times.
And I probably state this as if I came up with it, but I'm sure I heard it from Steve Gann, Jimmy, and Mark Cucuzella, and the rest of them. It's like riding a skateboard. You don't put your foot in front of you. That's for stopping because you're right. about to hit something. But if you want to go, you strike your foot right underneath you, your center of mass.
Yeah, and it's already headed rearward. Exactly. Yeah. And you let the road do the work of swinging your leg for you. Eventually, you know, if you're a power runner, you know, Mark Cucuzella, you know, if he's running 2:45 marathons right now, you know, he's driving his legs rearward as he hits. Okay. That's because he's an elite. He's a higher performance runner. If you're just out there to complete a half marathon, a 10K or a marathon, you do the same thing without that knee drive rearward, you know. You do the same thing. You still try to land underneath you, but you just relax. Your upper body falling forward is what's going to move you forward. It's not the power of your legs. And so anybody who wants to run above and beyond that function will, you can always add in strength, and it's just gravy, you know, more speed on top of what's already really good functioning technique.
Danny, this is all really good stuff, very easy to visualize, and I think if people are out there, they can try doing this from a standstill and just lean forward until you start falling, and your legs will, of course, reach out and catch you unless you fall on your face.
Right, yeah.
But one question I've always had about that is, as trail runners, we're out there doing ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
How does that relate to a downhill running technique? I mean, you don't want to allow your body to fall forward. I mean, is it because you're braking? Or is that the only time that you can say, I can reach out with my front foot because I am braking going down this hill?
Great question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's a really important question for people to realize that the one thing you don't want to do is be kind of bounding down the hill, right? Mm-hmm. That that really increases the shock of the trail coming up at you, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to get a long stride on the downhill. So what I tell people is this whole thing about leaning, right? That's how you regulate your speed, whether it's uphill, downhill, any direction that you're going, is if you're going downhill, if the hill doesn't warrant that you need to put the brakes on at all, like a very gradual downhill, lean into it, stay ahead of your feet. You'll just gain that much more fluidity and pull from gravity. Now, if the hill gets steeper and you start dropping off a little sooner, you want to let off on your gas pedal, because you don't, you know, you're just going to increase your impact if you don't let up on your gas. So you adjust your forward speed by allowing your legs to relax a lot and allowing your stride to shorten a little bit. So the more relaxed your legs are as you run downhill, the less shock runs up through your body. So you got to keep your knees bent. You got to, you know, keep your stride a little shorter. Your turnover might increase a little bit. So you got to make all these other little adjustments to keep from having a really long downhill bounding stride that's going to hurt your knees or your low back or something like that. So little, you know, little tweaks with the environment.
So, you know, I've often heard, and I don't think I really ever understood, even though I probably claim to have understood, when people said, lean back going downhill. You want to lean back.
Yeah.
Is that part of what you're talking about? So,
yeah.
So your legs are still coming down underneath you because you've taken your body mass and you've, you know, put it a little bit behind you.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, it's not leaning back. It's just coming up to upright. Think of your body, your posture as a gas pedal in a car. Right?
Yeah.
If you're leaning forward, you're leaning on the gas pedal, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're on the flat, you need to lean forward and the gas drives you forward. As you go down a hill, what do you do with your gas pedal in a car? You let off on it,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, you don't need that. Gravity's got you. Okay, so you don't lean backwards. You just come upright.
I get you.
Because if you lean backward, then you are jamming your whole body weight down into your legs. But if you stay upright, then you can just really spin your wheels, you know, shift to low gear.
Thanks for that clarification. And certainly we don't, when we're going downhill, reach down to our gas pedal and pull it up. we just let it stay in neutral and not try to bring it towards us.
Exactly.
You know, there's a really good video that I will link to our podcast description where you go over this. It's not the downhill part, but the whole idea that I think there are four gears, and you're running at the same cadence, but you're running at four different speeds. And the way that you describe how those speeds increase is how much you put the gas on or how far you lean. And he has four different simultaneous videos going where he's running at different speeds, but he has a metronome going and it's the same cadence.
Wow, this
is
cool.
It's really, really impressive.
It's a fun. Yeah, that was a fun video to make, and people have really learned a lot just from watching that one video. Because my idea, especially being a trail runner and an ultra runner, is you're most efficient in the mountains when you have a set of gears. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's why they invented Jeeps, back then. And you know, when you go up the steepest hill, you go to the smallest gear. So that means that's your shortest stride. If you want to go fast, you open up your gears, that's a longer stride. But if you notice how cars are built, engines turn over optimally at a certain RPM. So if you want to have good gas mileage, you try to stick within that small window of RPMs by just shifting the gears up or down, so that your effort level stays within a small window as well.
That is gold, right?
You see what I mean?
Right.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So then it always feels the same. So a cyclist is on a bicycle. They're doing 90 RPM on their crankset. They come up to a hill. They downshift. They're still doing 90 RPM. They go up to a really steep hill. They go all the way down to the bottom gear. They're still doing 90 RPM, you know. And the idea is to have the same effort level all the time, if you can, regardless of how steep or how shallow or how fast or how slow. And then you really have choices. You know, when things get hard, you just shift gears. You don't push harder. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Then
it's a really radical take on how to do difficult running, especially trails.
Really cool, because that's what I witness in Lee McKinley that we run with a lot. He just shortens his stride, very choppy, short steps, and he just motors up the hill and leaves me behind, and I'm sure I'm working much harder than he is. At least that's what I tell myself. At least that's what I look like when I'm at the top.
You look like you worked a lot harder than he did.
So, but let's talk about what that cadence is. You know, the number that's thrown out that we've talked about is 180. Is that the cadence that your metronome is set at?
It's the one mine is set at, but it's not the one I recommend everybody's metronome be set at.
Ooh,
okay.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, here's why. And this is the caveat that a lot of people don't talk about. And that is that from biomechanical studies, and I talk with Jay Dechari from, UVA back then. He's somewhere else now. But
Oregon. He's in Oregon.
Yep.
We've had him on. He's a good man.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Very knowledgeable. But all of the studies he did showed the range between 170 and 180. Now, that's dependent on your height, right? And because if you have really long legs, if you're a tall person, you got really long legs, you got no business turning your legs over to 180, strides per minute. That's a lot of work for that long. You know, you think in physics, the law of the pendulum, the longer the pendulum is, the slower it swings, right? So if you got long legs, the only way you're going to make those legs swing faster is to bend your knees, right? Because that shortens your pendulum. Every time you bend your knees, it shortens your pendulum. Mm-hmm. You can only bend your knees so much if you have long legs. And so they found in the studies that if you drop below 170, then you spend too much time on each leg during your support stance, and that costs you energy because you're having to use muscles to support your body during that support stance if it's too slow, if you're on it too long. On the other hand, you get up to the upper end, which is 180. If you get over 180, then you have to turn your legs over so fast that it costs you muscle work to turn them over faster. So yeah, sprinters always go over 180 strides per minute, but they get to go home in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be out there for a marathon, man, you need a cadence that really matches to your ideal economy, I will say. And so a lot of, if you're one of the taller runners, you can settle in towards 170. If you're one of the shorter runners, you can settle into 180. The Kenyans generally run when they're doing a marathon at a friggin' 450 pace or something like that. Mm-hmm. They usually run about 182, 183, somewhere in there. So it's not that much higher above, the 180. And these guys are rockets.
Yeah.
And so, so it's variable. So I don't want people to think if they're a tall person, they got to do 180 because that's going to be their heart rate if they're not careful,
That's good. And I'm glad you clarified that because, I'm not at 180. I'm at a bit below, like 175 is more my comfort zone. And so I'm glad I don't have to feel guilty about not hitting that 180. Yeah. One of the things that Dr. Mark talked about that I carried with me, and you can certainly expand on, is that the connective tissue can return energy at that 170 to 180 cadence, that everything has the ability to stretch and contract and return energy, but you lose it if you're going too slow and you're doing a slower, 150 cadence, that you don't get the benefit of that return energy from connective tissue.
Exactly, and that is true. But there's a few things that also are missed with that. That's a very broad generalization, So yes, the connective tissue gives you return energy. Now, that being said, there's a lot more to be utilized from connective tissue than just return energy.
Yeah.
Okay. So the return energy is that springiness. If you were to like jump up and down on the balls of your feet, you could feel that springiness in your Achilles tendon, on your plantar fascia, down at the bottom of your legs. Okay. Well, imagine this. And this is not even, I don't even know if anybody else talks this way. And that is that you can use connective tissue to move your body parts. It's not about necessarily recoil or anything like that. It is recoil, but the connective tissue, I'll give you an example. If your leg swings out behind you as you take a stride, right? Mm-hmm. It opens up your hip flexors, right?
Right.
Stretches that hip flexor. So If you are really relaxed in your legs, then as the road sweeps your leg out behind you, it stretches that hip flexor and all the ligaments and tendons along that whole quad and everything. And then if you're relaxed at some point, that rubber band motion recoils, and that's what pulls your leg forward. Mm-hmm. Rather than the contraction of your quads, you are relying on, because it's done in relaxation, you are bringing that leg back forward again, not by muscle power, but by connective tissue recoil.
Wow, that's a mind blow.
And correct me if I'm wrong, that hip flexor muscle you're talking about is the iliopsoas muscle, attaches to the front of the spine. It's a big muscle, and then it goes down to your thigh. So, I mean, it's a muscle that if when someone holds your feet and you're doing a setup, you'll get some of the contraction through your rectus abdominal, your six-pack, but they're not long enough to bring you all the way up. It hands it off to that hip flexor muscle. So they're a big, strong muscle. So when you say, when it goes behind you and it's stretched out, I can absolutely see it pulling back and swinging forward and being free energy in a sense because you've already stretched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
But if you hold tension in your glutes or tension in your hamstrings or you're powering through your leg swing, that stretch is not available.
You have to relax those hip extensors.
That's why people like Usain Bolt, you can watch him and he is so friggin' relaxed. And that's how he gets such a long stride and such a good return on his legs. He's got really long legs, but they turn over really fast. And it's not because he's, you know, really contracting his quads. It's because his legs are relaxed. They're returning themselves.
How do you relax that muscle? How do you mentally disengage or turn off those hip extensors? Besides buying your book and taking your class, huh? There's a lot to learn here.
$19.99, I'll tell you. Okay. That takes practice.
Yeah.
It takes practice learning how to relax. My biggest job when I teach runners how to run is teaching them how to relax so they can run, you know, more economically without using as many muscles, using other you know, the advantages of having really good physics working for you. And so in Tai Chi, you know, Tai Chi is based on, it's the foundation of all the martial arts. Well, if somebody wants to throw a punch at me in Tai Chi, it doesn't take arm muscles to throw a punch. And everybody thinks it does. Okay. All they do is they go into their center. They call it their Dan Tien. It's their center of power. It's like they talk about it in Pilates. It's this whole, it's the middle of your body. It's like located in your center of mass. If you can focus all your attention right in your center and turn your center and let your arm relax, all of a sudden your arm becomes like a whip and a weapon. Mm-hmm. Because you're turning the big source and everything outside of that is just swinging around. It's centrifugal force at that point. And it's not arm power that's doing it. And so it's a really different way to move your body. And it takes practice to be able to feel yourself moving from your center rather than feel yourself moving from your legs or quads or glutes or everything you're used to using. It really takes some practice. Now, the reason why, like I said, Tai Chi is practiced at a slow speed so that then when you speed it up, you're really good. In Qi running, I have people practice all of these individual little focuses, you know, whether it's how you hold your arms or how you swing your legs or picking your feet up. There's a million of them. I have them practice them individually, one at a time. So that then when they're out on a run, they can just bring them in together. Maybe try to do two at a time or three at a time, eventually five at a time. So eventually by training your body and mind to coordinate with each other, your mind is watching the trail. Your body knows the response that is best. Then at some point, trail running becomes more like a new language. And it's not just trying to muscle your way up the hill. It's really listening. Now, what do I need to change right now to make this the best series of steps that I can? That's where you really bring in a mindful component into your running, which then elevates it to this whole other, like, non-muscular approach to a really cool sport. It becomes more like dancing than like, you know, working your ass off once you're up there on the trail. It's so different, you know?
Yeah, running doesn't have to be hard. It shouldn't be hard. Mm-mm. And especially when you do these real 50-mile plus events, it can't be hard. You can't work that hard for that long. You've got to learn how to be efficient or learn how to suffer. You know, one of the two.
Yeah, learn how to be efficient. I learned it both ways, you know.
Danny, teaching this for over 20 years, when you go out and run, are you still doing this meaningful practice? Are you
Absolutely. Okay. Every single step. I mean, I tell you, I practice all of this stuff all the time because, you know, when I go out and I live, there's a trail right out my back door. And when I head out on the trail, I'm watching. I really want to get to the point where I am really unified with my environment. Whatever is thrown at me, I have exactly the right response. My balance is just right. My legs are right. My step is just right. I'm not doing anything less than I should be doing, and I'm not doing anything more than I should be doing. If you can find that sweet spot in your running, like you said, it truly becomes effortless. It becomes completely a whole nother activity than somebody you might be even running right next to.
I'm sure I know the answer to this question, but I gotta ask it anyway.
Yeah.
This full mindfulness that you're talking about, you probably do not advocate for people having headphones on.
Is that
take the headphones off and you got to get in tune with what you're doing, right?
Yeah, you got to get in tune.
I didn't want to hear that.
Well, the best way to really master something in your body is to always be in your body, you know. And if you're in a Lady Gaga tune, you're not in your body, you know. That being said, though, I have found that, you know, in the last 2 years, I've developed a way for people to learn this, and it's through what I call the Qi Running School, mm-hmm. and it's a weekly delivered lesson, just one lesson a week, and you upload a little audio file to your phone, and you can run with it, and I'm talking you through a lesson once a week, through it. Okay, here's how we're going to do this. Here's how you're holding your arms. Here's how you want to watch your feet, all this stuff. And people have really accelerated their learning and really honed in on having much, much better technique more quickly than I've ever been able to teach before. And so it's really working. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about if you're not listening to music, what can you listen to? The rhythm of the trail, the rhythm of your breathing, the rhythm of your feet hitting the ground. What kind of things do you dial into to help you with your form?
Yeah, well, what I call it is body sensing. So when I listen to my body. Am I hitting too hard? Am I feeling any discomfort anywhere? I'm listening to my body's pain podcast, you know. If I'm feeling any discomfort, then I think about, okay, where am I feeling that? Let's say it's in my knees. Okay. Then I go, okay, if it's in my knees, what could I change to make it go away? Well, if it's in my knees, usually I'm landing out in front of my body one way or another. Too much impact is what makes my knees start to talk. And so I'm listening to my knees and I go, okay, well, so my knees are saying, you know, too much impact. So what's my response? Okay, I could shorten my stride. I could lean to where I'm staying ahead of my knees instead. You know, I could keep them a little softer, my legs more relaxed, everything like that. So then I respond with a directive to my body, to my knees. Mm-hmm. So it's not just listening, it's responding. And so then I respond to my body, well, let's try shortening my stride. Okay, let's try letting my heels float up a little more behind me. And then I'll try that, and then I listen again. I go back for the feedback. Okay, how did that work? And my body will go, you know what? Actually, it's feeling a little better. And then my mind, so it's a conversation between my mind and my body. Mm-hmm. That's where the conversation goes on. And my mind goes, great, sounds like we're cool. And the knees go, yeah, we're cool. And I move on down the road having gotten through a whole conversation and improved my running at the same time. So that's what I'm listening to, is everything going on in my body. How's the trail feel? How's the terrain? How's my breathing? Is it labored? Am I tense anywhere in my shoulders, my muscles, my hips, my glutes, anywhere? I'm listening for tension. That's one of my first things. I'm listening for tension, and I'm listening for impact.
Now, there are a number of tools, and Scott, you bring this up often, and I'm surprised you didn't jump in on this question, and maybe you were holding it, that there are a lot of tools out there, like heart rate monitors and GPS things and cadence and all that stuff. Do you use those, or you just plug into your own biofeedback and listen to yourself?
The only thing I plug into, and I only I bring it up occasionally, is my metronome. I want to make sure that my cadence is really solid and dead on. And so I'll check in with it like every 15 minutes, you know. So if I have a metronome with me, I won't keep it running the whole time. I don't need to. But I do check back in with it just to make sure I'm staying honest, you know. And I like the metronome. I'm not a gearhead, you know, but that's the one thing that I really use a lot, because it's one of the only ways to tell whether you actually are working on a set of gears in your body. Mm-hmm. So if you have a metronome going at a steady 180 and you start running, let's say you want to run faster. Well, if your cadence goes up over 180, what does that tell you? That means your stride isn't increasing as you go faster. You're just turning your legs over faster. So you're not relaxing to go faster. You're working harder to go faster. You see where I'm getting?
Yeah.
That 180 keeps you honest. And so when I drop down into one of the lower gears, if I'm going slower, if I drop into a lower gear and all of a sudden my cadence drops down into 170 because I'm going slow, well, that means I'm spending too much time on my support stance and my legs are actually working harder even though I'm running slower.
You know, okay. Back to that point that you mentioned earlier, that it's very individual. How do you find out what your ideal cadence is? Is that just come by experimenting, or how do I know whether I should be at 180 or whether I should be at 175?
Yeah, that's more personal, just how it feels to you. What I tell people, you know, as long as you're over 170 and under 180, you're good.
Okay.
If you're a really tall person and you're running 180, something's not quite right. If you're a really short person and you're running 170, something's not quite right. Okay. So that's a place to start looking, to where you can kind of feel that ideal cadence that really does work for you.
Okay.
Let's talk about maintaining good form and the right cadence when you get deep into the miles. You've been out there 4 or 5 hours, and it's a real struggle to keep up with that perfect cadence. How do you adjust?
Actually, I've been doing it for so many years that if it's a struggle for me to keep the cadence, how I adjust is I'll shorten my stride, because I can tell that I'm getting tired, I'm starting to get lopey, I'm starting to overstride, and I'm reaching a little too far. So the metronome is telling me that, okay, you're starting to fall off the wagon, the wheels are coming off, and you need to shorten your stride back to what it actually really should be. Because when most people get tired, they get just too lopey. They slow down their cadence, and then their stride gets too long. And so that metronome will keep you within a really nice gear. So it's always about, for me, if it's a struggle to keep the cadence, that means that my stride's too long.
Do you ever advocate walking and just saying, you know what, I've got to put myself back together. I'm going to do some walking because I can't keep this cadence. I'm fighting too hard to keep the cadence. I better take a brief time out and walk.
Oh, I'm a big advocate of walking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not such a diehard that I won't let myself walk. And I learned that from ultra running, you know, it's just a law. But you allow yourself. But then here's the rule with walking.
Yeah.
So you take some time to recover yourself. Sometimes in an ultra, I'll see that I'm out on a 50 mile, I'm at 35 miles, and I just need a mental break. This is like, wow, I have been moving my body for how many hours now, and I just need a break.
Yeah.
And so I'll walk. And so when you start up again, though, that's when you want to start your metronome and just take tiny little strides when you first start up so that you can easily get back into that cadence. Then as you lean more, you just stay with the cadence. And You know, you just, it just comes right back in. Now, the rule of walking when you're out there running, I tell this to people. I said, you know, run until you're tired and you just can't, you know, and you need to walk. Right. And then walk until you feel guilty.
No. Oh, that's good. That's really good.
I'm going to get a tattoo of that one. That's just solid.
Yeah, run until you're tired, walk until you feel guilty. So, yeah, that's a good one.
I don't feel guilt, I'll tell you that. You know, push me pretty far. What about this back to one of our old questions, Scott, efficiency of running versus efficiency of walking? I mean, and you're a master at running. I imagine your gait, you're traveling at 3.5 miles an hour, running versus walking, about the same pace. Which is better?
It's easier for me to run at that pace than it is to walk. It's easier for me to run slow than walk fast, and they end up being the same pace.
Yeah.
It depends what you're acclimated to, because walking feels like a lot more energy usage to me.
Yeah.
With the exception of like super steep, you know, climbs and stuff like that, then you just gotta walk. You'd be crazy not to. But it's actually, you know, easier for me to run than it is to walk. You know, because I can. Yeah, it works really well. The funny thing is, you know, with all this stuff around efficiency and cadence and stride length and stuff, is that right now in my running, you know, I'm training a group of marathon runners right now and half marathon runners. We go out in the trails. We do them every Sunday, a long run. And these guys, some of them have heart rate monitors, and they're all running next to me. And they're at about 145, you know, which is normal for most people out there on a trail run. I'm at 120. And it's not because I'm some monster fit person with a major VO2 max or anything. I'm just not expending a lot of energy. And that's where that heart rate gets elevated from. So it's pretty different once your body gets really acclimated to running efficiently. And, you know, this whole thing about efficiency in your running, where it pays off, like at first I said, you know, it pays off in not having to recover very much, right? Well, it also pays off if I'm not working as hard. That means I'm not increasing my body temperature as much. It means I'm not sweating as much. It means I'm not burning through as much fuel. It means if I'm not sweating enough, I'm not having to replace my electrolytes as often. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things start changing as you start working on super efficiency with your running.
You know, not only has Danny Dreyer written the book on Qi running, but there's also another book he wrote on Qi walking. Mm-hmm. Ultra runners, there's always some walking involved. What is one of the one or two main problems that you see in ultra runners as they're walking? Or do we have the same issues? Or how can we walk more efficiently?
Most people, generally speaking, most people walk with too long of a stride. And that's counterintuitive. You know, you think if you want to keep your pace with walking, you would have to really stretch your stride out. But what really happens is if you really start doing some kind of power walking or something where you're really reaching forward with your legs to keep up a good walking pace, you will actually expend more energy and create more impact. Now, if you think of looking at a race walker, are those guys out there taking really long strides? You know, no. But they're walking at a 7.5 minute pace. You know, those guys are cruising down the road and they're taking small little strides. And that's because when you walk, your range of motion is much smaller than when you're running, because you are always in contact with the ground. The ground limits you. You can't open your stride up even bigger or you're going to stretch your ligaments. Okay, so you need to keep within that safe range that your ligaments can handle. So instead of getting a longer stride, you just work at getting a little quicker turnover with your legs at a shorter stride. And where that comes from is your upper body, not your lower body. You need to drive your arms faster, you know. So in ultra running, when your legs are toast, you need to drop into a walk. Every ultra runner on the planet underutilizes their upper body, you know? So in an ultra, you hardly ever use your upper body when you're out there doing those long trail runs. So if you switch into a shorter stride in your walking and leg turnover a little faster because you're swinging your arms faster, then you can actually kick in a set of muscles that have been pretty well rested the whole event, you know? So there's a whole resource of power to draw on that, that most people don't even pay attention to.
Yeah, I remember learning that most of our walking power comes from the torque of the pelvis versus the torso, right? This, the counter rotation of those two creates the movement. The legs are just catching you and moving you forward, but the power comes from that torque. And that's why you were saying move your arms faster, because essentially you're just torquing more and faster.
Exactly. And what most people never talk about is that all of that drive into your hips and pelvis to turn your pelvis and drive those legs comes from your obliques. Okay. Huge set of core muscles that very few people use when they're running is obliques. Now, these obliques, you have your internal, external obliques, and they're the only set of muscles in the human body that works in pairs. And that means that the right side external oblique is contracting at the same time that the left side internal oblique, because the muscle fibers are lined up. They contract in the same way. So you got two different muscles doing one job. And how efficient is that? Those muscles don't get tired. They just don't get tired very easily at all, because both of them are helping each other. And it's an awesome way to really power your running, especially on the uphills, you know, using your obliques to drive your hips, which drive your legs, you know. But you're not driving yourself up the hill with your legs. It's like your legs become like ski poles, and they're being driven from your hips because your obliques are driving those hips.
So what are some of the cues that you have in your head when you're at the base of a real steep climb, and what do you think? We're not running now we're hard hiking up this thing. What are some of the things that you remind yourself of when you're doing that?
First thing I remind myself of is to quit using my legs. Now that sounds so counterintuitive, to head up a really steep section and say to yourself, God, I finally get to rest my legs. It's been a long day. You know, and what I'm doing is, if I can really relax my legs, then my hips can truly drive my legs without those muscles firing. I only need enough, integrity in my legs to have them act as a ski pole. And that's where my glutes come in. My glutes just kind of lock my leg to my pelvis. But I'm not, like I said, powering with my glutes either. I'm just using my glutes to stabilize my legs to my pelvis, so that when I'm driving with my obliques, those legs are just like doing it. So that's the first thing I tell myself, is to relax your legs, soften them, forget you even have legs, you know? And then the next thing is, as my obliques are driving those hips rearward, my arms are doing the opposite by driving forward and up the hill.
What about poles? So what about trekking poles? Are you an advocate of those to climb those hills? Does it help or hurt us as we use those poles?
I think it helps. I don't use them that much now because I'm not doing ultras. But when I did Leadville, that was back in 1996, I believe, was when I ran Leadville. I really wished I would have had a set of trekking poles, and they work great. But the thing about poles is that it slows down your cadence. And so, you know, because you got this big old thing on your arm. And so people slow their cadence way down, and all of a sudden, they're using their upper body to power them up the hill, but they're also using more leg muscle to do it. So, yes, I am a total advocate of poles, but only in certain circumstances. Very steep, you know. Very steep stuff.
This is
the rest of the time. Yeah. You got no business doing them. Yeah.
So you've talked a couple of the main principles that you've already talked about is having good posture or alignment. The second one is allowing your body to lean forward and having a good cadence What are the next steps that you would teach?
Oh, the only ones that really matter beyond that is to make sure that your arms and legs are bending.
Okay.
Make sure they're bending. You know, if your arms are swinging at your sides, they're too long and they're going to slow down your cadence. If your legs aren't bending, you're going to run in a shuffle. And, you know, you need to really keep those knees bent and those elbows bent. And that makes all the difference in the world.
I have a question. How important are your arms to set the cadence? It might be easier to use your arms to move quickly, yeah, and then the rest of the body follow. I'm thinking that might be easier than directing the legs or the core.
Perfect. Yeah. That's exactly what I tell people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Your arms are much easier to swing fast than your legs,
yeah,
but your legs will do whatever your arms do.
Right.
You are hardwired. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Talk to us about what you would recommend. You know, a lot of us get out there early in the morning to do our work. And I'm guilty of this. You turn off the car engine, you step out of the car, and you hit your stopwatch, and you start running. Is that the best, yeah, way to do it, or what do you recommend? Is
what
there any kind
think,
of a warm up?
Now we can't run with music, and now we have to stretch.
I know,
and warm up.
It's messing me up.
I'm not a big proponent of stretching before you run, unless you need to stretch. If you're tight, you stretch. But if you're not, then the best way to really work your way into a run, you can take off running, just don't take off running fast. You know, okay, that's what a warm-up is about. And in throughout Qi running, one of the things that I'm a huge proponent of is a principle from Tai Chi called gradual progress. And that means that there's principles that they follow in order to increase, improve, master anything. You have to start from where you're at and gradually progress into where you want to be, okay? You don't jump out of the car and hit your best pace right off the bat, and if you want to do it well. So what I tell people is just start off slowly, and just gradually as you get more loose, get more into a lean, let your stride open up, you know, just your job as you start running is to start off in whatever condition you're in and gradually build in, increase the level of relaxation in your body.
Danny, I am absolutely sold on all of this. I mean, you could tell me this guy is a different color, and I would believe you right now. People that are listening to this, where do they go to get more of it, to embrace it, to read about it, to study, to learn it and become it?
Sure. We have a website, qirunning.com, and that's C-H-I running. And you can go to our website, and there we have tons of blogs, articles, products. I have three books, Qi Walking, Qi Running, and Qi Marathon, mm-hmm, which, by the way, we could save that for another whole talk.
Yeah.
And then we have all kinds of different – we have what's new on our website right now is we have all kinds of online training programs. We've partnered with Final Surge. And so they're going to be delivering our training programs, which are awesome because you can just go and sign up for a 5K training program, and it's all loaded up into your calendar, and you can access it through the Final Surge app and work with a coach and all kinds of stuff. It's a really cool new thing. We just launched actually today.
Oh.
But the other thing is that what I mentioned earlier, excuse me, is the Qi Running School. And, you know, they can go to our website, the very front homepage, right in the middle of it, you get a 21-day free trial. And you can see what this school is like and really get a chance to wet your feet. And it's a really fun way for people to do it. And then the other ways is we have, you know, we have over 200 instructors now all over the world. And Qi Running is, I think it's taught now in 23 countries. And, you know, the book is in like 15 languages, and
wow,
it's really widely available. In fact, Monday, a week from today, I'm leaving for India and China for a month, and I'm going to be teaching 20 instructors, Qi Running instructors in Mumbai, and then going on to Hong Kong and teaching another group of instructors there. And talk about a running boom. Those two countries alone, it's only like 3 billion people between them. they are really going through a huge, monstrous running boom there. And so we want to be able to, hit the ground running, so to speak, with these guys. And they are so excited. And I'm really thrilled to be going over there and teaching Qi running to all these Indian people and Chinese folks. And I'll be in the People's Republic of China, too. I mean, it's big there. And people have already heard about us and everything. So it's really cool to see, how widely now this is available. Okay, so our website's a really good place for people to start. And by the way, I was going to say, just for this podcast, we did a promotional code for your listeners.
Oh.
If they want to get a streaming version of our Hills and Trails DVD, a digital version, they can get 15% off. And if they use TRAIL15, all caps, and go to our store and look up the video of Hills and Trails, and when it asks for a product code, you can put in TRAIL15 and get 15% off of the little video. That's awesome.
That applies to co-hosts too, doesn't it? We're entitled to that. We're going to do it, Scott. We need to do this. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Hey, we have really enjoyed this. We enjoy learning how to run better. In fact, Don was just talking to me on the trail just last week, right? Yeah. He was saying, Scott, you run too loud. Try to sneak up on me. He says, you're clomping like a horse back there.
That's good advice.
I used a little more tact than that. But
that's what I heard, Danny. That's what I heard. And it worked.
What came out went in different. And I try to do that. I watch people that are ahead of me that are walking their dog or whatever, and I see how long it takes them to recognize that I'm behind them, just to kind of measure my efficiency. Am I clomping or how loud am I?
So. Yeah. At this point, I have to like kick rocks and clear my throat, lay a big hocker on a tree, and then they find, because I've shocked some people, man. I tell you, I run by them, give them a heart attack.
I'm not there yet, but I will be after I go onto your website and register for the Hills and Trails and Trail 15.
Yeah, and sign up for that 21-day free trial, because if I talk to you again, I want to find out how it worked for you.
We will talk to you again. If you'll allow us to. Let's talk.
Oh, anybody can.
The Qi Marathon, and then let's talk about footwear selection too, because we left that out completely. But I think it would be.
I'm sure he has some opinions on footwear.
Good to look into that.
Oh yeah.
Well, when you get back from India and China, let's schedule another podcast.
Yeah, you will love the whole thing on how the Qi Marathon is designed as a training program, and it is again unusual, ahead of the pack kind of thinking. And it's really fun stuff. It's really cool. So, yeah. Well, this has been great, you guys.
Yes, thank you, Danny. Appreciate you making time for us. And
no problem.
Go out and Qi Mas.
Yeah. Qi Mas. There you go. I love that.